Welcome to the show. On today's episode, we have Renee Serban. She is an international skincare expert. She serves on the board of education for the International Association for Applied Corneotherapy, which we'll learn a little about on this episode. Also on this episode, we talk skincare, hormonal acne, aging skin, treatments, products, devices, and so much more. So if you want the best skin possible, or if you're one of those beauty biohackers like myself, this is definitely the episode for you. Please enjoy. Welcome to the Kat Kativi Podcast, your source for all things health, happiness, and beauty. Hello, how are you doing today?
Really, really good. Thank you. I am so excited to have this conversation with you, Kat. Thanks for having me.
As a former esthetician, I love to hear what the industry is doing nowadays. But first, can you tell us a little bit about your journey into the skincare industry?
Absolutely. I come from a family of medical professionals, in fact, and I can't tell you that I always had a driving, burning desire to be an esthetician per se. I wanted to be a superstar or a teacher, and I do have a natural talent for teaching. My family are like university students, so I went to university already breaking the family rules, quote unquote, the, you know, unwritten rules, I should say. Nobody forces anybody to do anything in our family, but your own perception of it. So I went to do business studies at university and always had an entrepreneurial angle to me. So business studies was really good. I majored in marketing. And before I went, I actually did my last 2 years, 3 years of high school being homeschooled. I begged my mother to homeschool me, actually. And I thought to myself, okay, now I had 6 months between graduating homeschooling to the next intake of university. And I thought, okay, my mom is a chronic nail biter. So I found this nail technology course because I thought maybe I can help her stop to bite her nails. It failed, by the way. But I went to do nail technology. So I was doing acrylic nails and, you know, all sorts of nail enhancements. I can free sculpt acrylic nails. I don't anymore, but it's a hidden talent because I wanted to set my own schedule as a student, because how cool would that be that I just go to people's homes so they can come to my home, set my own schedule, make some money to support myself during university. And it ended up working in a clinic that really kind of, I say I got bit by the beauty bug, because it was just something really interesting about watching people as you're sitting at the front of the clinic, people coming in, you know, fine, but perhaps that little angle of like they want something better. They disappear into a magical room somewhere in the clinic and then come out like walking an inch taller. So I was really intrigued by that. And yes, and then just started to dig into the psychology behind that. And then was really intrigued by corrective skin, like how an impact that can have on people's confidence when they have better skin.
Yes. And I know a lot of the women that listen to this podcast, they have hormonal problems. So one of the big things that they have is hormonal acne, and that can be just terrible. Like, it doesn't matter like how much money you have or how successful you are. If your skin looks bad, you feel bad. It's just, it sounds vain, but it's really true. You have to put your best foot forward. And when that's not looking good, everything else kind of...
Yeah, it's so true. It just makes you feel more self-conscious, and then just not allowing you, your inner self, to put that best foot forward. So I, at the moment, we're having a little bit of a stressful time here in my neighborhood, in my province. And, you know, my skin is feeling that as well. When stress is elevated and you can feel that, you know, surge of the adrenals, then even though looking at my skin, people might go, your skin looks really good. And in general, it does. But I know there's that subtle signs of stress that is elevated hormonal, you know, variation. So hormones play a big role. hormones definitely has a massive impact. And where I see it is not just acne in particular, but in people with rosacea. It really is a big trigger in rosacea. And of course, anything like that, I feel that it always triggers premature aging as well. So it's a big issue. And one of the first thing I tell my acne clients and my rosacea clients is to learn how to calm their inner being, just to mellow everything out. That self-care component becomes really important with skin disorders like acne, and in particular rosacea as well.
So I might say this wrong, but can you tell me what corneotherapy is?
Yes, perfect pronunciation. So corneotherapy is what I live and breathe and eat. It is a treatment methodology and approach to skin that basically means that whatever we do, we are focused around protecting the epidermis at all times. So it's a little bit the opposite of what our industry does. So we're not going to come in and blast the face off and scrub it like the kitchen floor and peel it to oblivion. We actually do the opposite. We want to put a tarp over the roof shingles that might be a little bit broken and impaired to stop the roof from leaking, damaging the inside. And then we work at repairing from the inside out. I'll go get the door. Sorry. So one of the big mandates of corneotherapy really is that we want to restore the skin barrier function to allow the skin to protect us from the outside world. Because when the barrier is broken, then when it deteriorates to a point that's far enough, it actually is going to trigger our immune system. So I think the work that we do is super important. We literally cannot live without skin. So it is fundamentally important to have it as healthy as we can have it at any age. So I know people are fixated on youth and, you know, wrinkles and pigmentation. And yes, while those might be concerns for people to have flawless, dewy, glowy skin, if it's not healthy fundamentally, the rest of it doesn't matter. And in fact, the cell's capacity to regulate itself is non-existent if it's in a fight or flight mode anyway. So whatever treatment pathway we put people on, we always take a moment to repair the skin barrier continuously, because we know whatever else we throw at the skin after that fact is going to have a much better result than if we didn't take that first step to make sure that the foundation is laid properly and that the house we're building is strong.
Let's talk about ingredients. What are some of your favorite ingredients that you love?
Oh, that is a great one, because I want to go, like most women, to the vitamin A's and the vitamin C's and the vitamin B's and E's, because they're fun to talk about. And they are. They're really great products. But if the fundamentals are not there, doesn't matter again. So to me, I'm all about getting that water oil balance within the skin good. So some people require more lipid content or oil content. Some need some help in retaining water in their skin barrier. So things that come to mind for me is what we call a dermal membrane structure composition, things that mimic your own cell membrane. Like phosphatidylcholine, ceramide, squalane, triglycerides. So basically coming down, if I have to break it down to things that equate to free fatty acids, cholesterol, and of course the water, NMF, the components that make up natural moisturizing factor for our skin. Then the basis is there, and then we can really stimulate or regulate other cells of the skin, like regulate the melanocyte, perhaps, that is responsible for pigmentation, or the fibroblasts, stimulate that to make collagen, elastin, glycosaminoglycans.
Yes, I love that, because I think everybody likes to blast things with dry it out, do this, or peel it off, or rip it off, or whatever. But then I notice when I had really bad acne, if I just moisturize more, it got better. So it's like you're protecting it.
Yes.
And then it heals.
I'm so happy that you mentioned that, because I have to admit, one of your episodes I really, really liked. It was of a lady named Heidi, and now her last name is just not coming to me right now, but she's a nutritionist as well, functional nutritionist or something along those lines. Exactly. So when she was talking to you, I was like, girl, you are like my person. Because absolutely. People want to fight. People with acne think that it's an oil problem, but it's not. It's actually an essential fatty acid deficiency problem paired with what we call a corneocyte compaction dysfunction or an incomplete corneocyte compaction. By that, we mean if you're thinking of the five layers of the epidermis, that stratum granulosum, where the cell is very juicy and plump and it has a nucleus, it goes through a flattening process as it comes to the surface of the skin. Then, if things go well, sheds. You know, we all shed skin on a daily basis. Skin cells, I should say. But when that doesn't go according to plan and it actually doesn't flatten properly and the cell envelope, as what we call it in technical terms, is not formed the right way, it leaves little gaps in the skin. It can look bubbly almost on the surface of the skin when you start to feel that texture, the rough and bumpiness on the skin, what people will call congestion perhaps. It's exactly part of what the problem is. It's actually the quality, not just the quantity of oil that's an issue. I would much rather people have more oil than less oil, because less oil in the skin is harder to treat long term. And it's an inflammatory skin condition as well. So you have to address the inflammation at the same time as addressing the oil. I always have the story about the P. bacteria that my clients understand really simply when I paint the picture for them. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
Okay. So P. bacteria, in new literature, you're going to see it as C. bacterium. But the job of it is to transform or convert triglycerides in the skin to free fatty acids. Now, typically where this bacterium should be is on the surface of the skin, which is actually means that it's in our benefit. It's a positive bacterium for us, but it is anaerobic. So it can live on the surface of the skin or within the skin, with or without air. So if we're stripping the skin with harsh cleansers, like squeaky clean, like our kitchen floor, there is no triglycerides on the surface of the skin for these P. bacteriums to convert. And that is basically their diet. That's what they eat for lunch. They will then go down the hair follicle to a smorgasbord of triglycerides and the pilosebaceous gland. And that it will then convert the triglycerides to free fatty acids in an area that should be pH neutral instead of something that should be slightly acidic on the surface of the skin. It's like throwing acid on a tabletop, then that's what starts to trigger that whole inflammatory process. So that's the first step I do with my clients. I throw the harsh cleansers in the garbage can in front of them and give them a gentle, I want them to think of their skin as inflamed and sensitized. So swapping that out within 2 weeks, you can already see a difference in people's skin, just restoring the surface oils of the skin. And that sounds simple. It's just one component of a real multifaceted skin condition. I should say that sounds simple, but it really is not quite that simple.
So when it comes to cleansers, do you do the double cleanse? Do you do oil-based? Which ones do you go for?
My preference is like a cream or milk-based cleanser for people who are drier, which in North America, the majority of people have an extent of lipid dryness or sensitivity to their skin. It's very infrequent, especially up here in Canada, where I see a true, true oily skin. And I measure skin all the time to see it. Like my oil lipid measurements are always low, especially up here. So definitely a cream or milk-based cleanser. Milk is my favorite. It's more about the ingredients that's in it. I don't only want it to cleanse my skin. I also want it to start to rebuild my cell membrane. So I like a little bit of squalene, ceramide, things like that, that is part of that cell membrane nutritional profile in the basis of the cleanser. If it's a more oilier skin, then I definitely want to go to non-artificial emulsifiers or surfactants. So I really try and stay away from preservatives and surfactants in the skin, and also refattening agents, things that really change the constitution of the cell itself. So I stay away from those. But when I wake up in the morning, I cannot lie to you. I am all for simplicity too. And I love myself a good microfiber cloth. If I did a double cleanse the night before and I did nothing but sleep, a microfiber cloth does the trick as well, especially for people with conditions like rosacea, for example. Sometimes too much is not a good thing. Actually, most of the time, more doesn't mean more. Less means more. Yeah, always have a microfiber cloth in my back pocket. They're great to travel with, and cleansing milk. And yes, double cleanse. Double cleanse, I think, is especially important if you're wearing makeup.
Yeah, sometimes I have to do a triple cleanse when I wear makeup. But in the mornings, I stopped washing my face. I just use a little bit of a toner spray, moisturizing toner. That's it.
Oh, yes. I have two young children. Like, morning is my battle zone, I tell you. So absolutely, I love the microfiber cloth. I just wet it with lukewarm water, wipe my face off, make sure I get the eye sleep out of my eyes if there is any, and then tone and moisturize. And my skin is very happy usually.
Let's talk about how much control do we have over the outcome of our skin?
Oh, okay, I really want to talk about this because I think it is nuts, absolutely nuts, that people think that they don't have power in their own hands. I would much rather my clients spend the money on good quality home care that they do every day than be on my treatment bed, essentially. I mean, I do very little hands-on work. I have a very closed appointment book because I do training in our industry as well. But I do enough because I choose to keep my hands dirty, as I call it, because I like that real world experience and documentation and case studies. So I live in a community that happily lets me use them for case studies, the wonderful support here. But I have noted, and actually this is the silver lining from this whole COVID thing, is that indeed, in my experience, 70% of the outcome is in your own hands. It is that 30%, because let's face it, we all want 100%. So I always said that clinics can add about 30% to the total outcome. But if your client is not doing the right thing at home on a daily basis, you don't get the same results in any clinical service that you do for your clients anyway. It's like going to the dentist. I say this all the time. You go to the dentist, you have a nice clean, you're 6 months clean. But if you do nothing between those visits, it's nasty. Like, you just, then your next visit is a bigger thing. When you do the right things in between and brush your teeth every morning and every night, then you have a very happy, more successful treatment when you do go for that checkup every 6 months or whatever it is for you. So definitely, if you have to choose, spend the money on good quality skincare that matches your skin type.
So how does stress relate to the skin, and what can we do about that?
You know, I think that we live in such a fast world these days. It's a super fast world. And I think that it moves so fast that sometimes we lap ourselves on the track. So to me, I think it's really making sure that you take time to pause, give your brain time to file things. And I'm guilty of this myself. I really have to schedule almost a pause, take that walk. Self-care is super important because stress, especially adrenal stress, long-term stress, really elevate a number of hormones. And hormones has a direct influence on skin. There is what we refer to as a gut, skin, and brain triangle correlation, and they all have a knock-on effect on each other. So we know that for some people, when they suffer from anxiety and they feel that in elevated times, that they get upset stomachs as well. And you can typically find that when people have that going on, it's going to manifest in the skin as well. We refer to it as the skin as a site of response to some other event, whether that be something that you got sick with, stiff and you had to go on antibiotics, and then you see it on the skin afterwards. Sometimes I notice things on people's skin before they even know that, for example, menopause, great example. I can see on their skin and in their hair growth that they're heading into menopause before they might necessarily realize that there's other symptoms. I used to do a lot of electrolysis. So that was like a great up close and personal view of the hair changing right in front of your eyes in the span of 6 months. And I'll say to people, have you had your hormones checked in? They go, oh no, maybe I should, because I've been struggling sleeping. And, you know, I've been feeling a bit like my thermostat is not working properly. And lo and behold, always like within 6 months, I'll come back and say, oh my goodness, I'm premenopausal, or I've hit menopause and now it's an actual diagnosis. And you just nod your head. So it's interesting how the skin tint can tell you stories about what's going on internally. And I also see it with autoimmune disorders, which is, there's a rise of it as of late in my clients here anyway. So that also has a big knock on skin.
Yes, my endocrinologist was telling me that since the pandemic and all the stress involved, she's had thousands of women come in with Hashimoto's and all these sorts of new autoimmune conditions just because they're freaking out.
100%. And sometimes sometimes it's a very subtle change in skin. It can be as simple as an inflammation of the skin. And with the mask wearing, if we're having that topical irritation on top of that, I cannot tell you how much perioral dermatitis we're seeing in people who've never suffered from it before. So it's manifesting in different ways. And absolutely, I think the adrenaline, the testosterone, estrogen, big players when it comes related to skin. So if you're stressed and you're having a rise of testosterone in particular, if you have a testosterone sensitivity, which some women do, you're going to see some things on your skin. It doesn't mean that it's all like dire straits. As I say, I always paint the worst picture, but the indications can be very subtle, but just enough to be noteworthy. So I try to catch people when it's noteworthy before it is now a disorder. Rosacea, again, is a great example because it's a skin condition that we maintain and manage over time. And with the stresses and anxieties of what's been going on around the world as of late, I see that flare up in people who've managed it very well for a long, long period of time. So it's just, okay, what can we do? How can we address this differently? How can we even out our own hormones? And I love working with nutritionists, with naturopathic doctors, endocrinologists. In Canada, you have to have a referral from your primary healthcare physician to get that kind of care here. And with the healthcare system a bit swamped, good luck with that. So I kind of love involving my naturopaths and my holistic nutritionists and so forth. And that at the moment, it's always a professional referral, which I really advocate for as well. If it's not your zone of expertise, refer it to a friend whose expertise it is.
So I also noticed during the pandemic, not just the stress, but it was the first time that I personally was makeup free for months in my life. Because when you have acne and maybe some old spots you want to cover up, you just get used to it and it just becomes a thing. And I've always heard that the makeup can be also causing it, but then you want to cover the acne, so then you use the makeup and then you're in the cycle and you're stuck in there for decades. So this was the first time. And I would say after month one, I had acne. Month two, I still had acne. Month three, gone. And then I'm like, okay, maybe it's related. And that's when I finally took my own advice and got really natural makeup products with very little synthetic and preservatives, and anything with any endocrine disruptors, I just knocked it out of there.
Yes, which I think everybody should do. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, so good. How liberating. How liberating. Good for you. Here's my little secret. When I transition people onto the skincare line that I use, I literally, as much as I can, and ask them to go bush. Now, I'll explain that because I'm not sure if that's a South African, Kiwi, or Canadian slang that I use. Don't know where I picked that up, but going bush means that you literally do nothing for your skin for as long as you can. So if I ask people for 2 weeks, because that's one cellular life cycle at minimum, depending on your age, but let's call it 2 weeks to get a ballpark. So if they can do it for 2 weeks, amazing. Hello, holiday time. I'm getting all my clients to just do nothing, just do as little as possible, because that really helps when you're transitioning from skincare lines as well and get cellular debris out of your skin without adding anything, especially if you're using any skincare that contains emulsifiers, which I also don't like, by the way, but wonderful way to just get it purged out of the skin. And then start to use whatever the new thing is. So, oh my gosh, I love makeup myself. It is the thing that takes me the longest to put on in the morning. My skincare takes me 2 seconds. My makeup takes me 50 minutes. No, I lie, not quite that long, but it takes me much longer to do my makeup. So I love mineral makeup with clean formula, as you mentioned, as much as possible, because it at least sits on the surface of the skin as opposed to absorbing into the skin. So the one thing for me is that then it doesn't interfere with my corrective skincare regime that I set up for my clients. So I love myself some mineral makeup. Absolutely. But whenever I can, like today, I'm wearing some makeup because I'm talking to you and I have a few Zoom meetings later today. So got to do it. Tomorrow, I actually have an office day and I will walk into the office with no makeup on my face if it's just me and the team. If I have people in there, then I won't. But my team has seen me without a stench of makeup more than once. Yes, I'm all for having that break. And yes, especially when your skin is getting irritated and inflamed, sometimes we say remove the offending cause. So just stop all the things and then reintroduce them one at a time to figure out what the offending item is.
Yes, I've actually seen that. But I will say sometimes it takes longer than in just a few weeks. Sometimes you need to wait a month and see what happens.
100%. I fully agree. I love the 3 month thing. That's a beautiful 90 day turnover. In the same breath, I have to work with people with what they're willing to give me. And I'm prepared to take whatever. If they give me 2 days, I'll still take 2 days. You kind of meet people with where they're at. But yes, this has been another blessing that we've had. I would love, even with acne in particular, when clients come back and they say, even if they can tell me that they feel like they can get away with less makeup and feel comfortable, that's already a win, a step in the right direction. But there's definitely beauty to me when they come and say, I feel comfortable going to a coffee shop with nothing on my skin. Now I'm like, okay, we're good. If your husband can see you without makeup, or your boyfriend or your partner, you know, yes. If you don't feel like you have to wear makeup even at home, yes, that's what it should be.
Yeah, I will say that took me a lot longer than I'd like to admit.
Yes, but that's a thing, right? Because I love having this conversation, because you can see how deeply impacting that is on people. Like, you know, that you feel that you have to cover it. And probably the people who love us probably will be fine without covering it. But it doesn't matter what other people think. It's what you think and how you're willing to walk tall and so forth. So I love that when you can get to that point in your own core that you're like, that's fine. I'm comfortable with this. I'm okay with that. And that's when I truly see my clients walk taller and think, gosh, just look at that confidence, their self-esteem, and now they feel that they can conquer the world. That's the non-monetary payment of the work that I do. And I thrive on it. It's almost like a drug when you see people, especially I find the teenage boys in particular. We have a ice hockey academy here in town, a pretty, pretty big one. And for them, when I can see that we control their acne a little bit better, that they're just like, oh yes, we won the game. And now you can see they're taking off their helmets and then signing things for the young fans. I just, you know, it's just another way that I'm just looking at the work and go, yeah, that's so cool that they feel comfortable doing that where they were really hiding under their helmets before then, because I do quite a lot of work with the academy. So just another little example.
Are there any non-topical lifestyle, maybe diet or other things that you recommend that clients do that are suffering from hormonal acne?
Yes. Despite what your brain might tell you, because people go, I have so much oil. We already mentioned that they think it's an oil problem. I confiscate people's stripping cleansers and give them a very gentle cleanser because let's face it, they're going to need something to remove the makeup with. True. I ask them to embrace as many makeup-free days as they can, understanding that they need to cover what they need to cover to feel comfortable and, you know, confident in their own skin, which is my big thing. Whether it is an end user client or one of my clinical clients, I want them to be walking tall and confident because that relates to just better, you know, better income, putting your best foot forward, better relationships, all those things. And then I give them omega supplements. I think omegas are really, really important because we want good quality oil in the skin. We don't want deep fryer oil. We want olive oil. So those epidermal lipids, I really want to change that. And I can see it time and time again in diagnostic equipment that I use, that the oil quality can be monitored with technology like UV light, for example. And you can see the color change over a span of 6 months. It's never fast. Unfortunately, nothing with skin is. There is no overnight miracle. Let me tell you, I'd be like a billionaire, gazillionaire if there was, because I would absolutely tell everybody if I find it. But skin is slow and tedious. There's no two ways around it. It's a bit, the results is slow and steady is going to get you there. Be the turtle, don't be the rabbit. So consistent habits, and definitely they need to stop stripping their skin. That is just not friendly for an acneic skin. And drying it out is never the answer. It's actually the opposite. You want to hydrate it.
We're getting older no matter what, if we like it or not. So let's talk about anti-aging ingredients. Yes. And maybe procedures like lasers or other modalities. Mm-hmm. What do you find gives the best results?
Okay. The things that stimulate the fibroblasts are from a cosmetic point of view are pretty well documented. The holy grail, I suppose, still remains vitamin A, vitamin B. I like vitamin B for multiple reasons. Other people will say vitamin C and vitamin E. I do like this EGCG for short. The full name is not pronounceable. If you Google EGCG, you'll totally find it. It's an extract from green tea, but without the caffeine. And I really like it because it does repair the skin barrier. It is anti-inflammatory and antioxidant, and it also is a collagen synthesizer. I love an ingredient called Boswellia, which is a frankincense extract, also really great collagen synthesizer, but it's really good in protecting people who have higher risk of skin cancer because it also has a barrier protective component to it. So I really like that. And it has to be paired with things that rebuild the skin barrier, that phosphatidylcholine, triglycerides, and squalene ceramides kind of have to be with that. And if it goes to vitamin A and vitamin C in particular, I love working with those components when they're encapsulated in liposomes because it really minimizes the topical irritation that can be evident in some skins with those items. So if you encapsulate it, the absorption is better and you don't have the possibility of those irritations to the same extent. Treatments, I am a big fan and do a lot of collagen induction therapy, and you can do it. The home version is also good. So that's probably my top thing for anti-aging. I just love collagen induction therapy. I also love LED. I don't think it's quite as potent for anti-aging as some other treatments, but I do think it is worth incorporating it with treatments such as collagen induction therapy. I love microcurrent. I love microcurrent paired with the buccal or sculptural facial, which is a massage technique that is very popular at the moment. Meghan Markle made it very famous. So I love that. I'll just say to the audience here that you can only physically do so many a day because it actually is really hard on your hands. So be kind and understand that there's limited appointments for those types of treatments, the buccal massage. But I love it. I don't think laser is not my go-to unless I really have to, because the heat associated with that gives us a wound shock collagen that I would rather avoid unless I have no other choice. So that's why I like dermal needling, because the collagen that is produced in that is stimulated by a growth factor, by epidermal growth factor. So it's a much more loosely used, I hate using this word, but it's a more natural type of collagen. And the way it looks to me on clients is that the one looks almost woody, like harder as an end result, and the other looks like a softer, more pliable end result.
When you say the collagen induction therapy, that's microneedling?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I should have said. Yes, collagen induction therapy, also known as dermal needling or microneedling.
Okay. Yes, I started doing that and I personally love it. I think it's great.
I think so too. It also helps your products absorb better. So that's an extra bonus. And the way that I describe it to clients, it's like an awesome Instagram filter that you suddenly see after a few months. It just fine tunes everything. And I love that you can do it continuously. And if you stop doing it, it doesn't mean that you're impacting the progressive results of treatment program either. You can pause, and I'm guilty of that because, you know, life happens, and then I pause and then I'm like, oh, okay, I need to start doing that again. So it just builds on each other. It's not like some like laser hair removal, for example. You need to do it in the series to get the best results. If you skip it, you're impacting the ultimate outcome, because the hair grows in a certain, you know, rhythm that you need to get the hair in a certain phase of growth. With dermal needling, it's not like that. You can stop, you can carry on, you can restart. It's wonderful. I love it. And you can do it clinically and or at home.
I just do want to mention, because I know how, especially Americans, if you think a little is good, they're going to do it every day as deep as possible and tear up their face, because I know people like this. Yeah. So how often is okay and how deep?
Deep is for your esthetician and the US in particular, actually your physician, to do the deep. The only reason to go deep is if you really need to treat scarring, because you actually have to break up the scar tissue. That's the reason for going deep. If your concern is anti-aging, open pores, fine lines, wrinkles, all of that, less is more. So shorter needles. So you can then even do it at home. So we're talking about 0.02 or 0.05 of a millimeter. Some people will retail 0.5. In Canada, that is like the estheticians can use 0.5 and the physicians can use like 1 millimeter. So the 0.2, 0.3 is more than adequate for at home. And there it becomes a little bit of a thing. I like the idea of doing a little bit more frequently at the beginning. So kind of build, but don't start with every day. For heaven's sake, you'll be like a little bit red and flushy all the time. But I say start with like every 3 days. And then see if you can move to like every other day just for the first month or so, and then weekly. I love the weekly regime because I can tie it in with the same day that I do my mask, and it's just part of my weekly self-care. Friday night is my night. Yay for, you know, I love Friday nights when that rolls around. So yes, just tie it into your own self-care night, and continuously after you've kind of got that initial boost happening for you, maintain it with once a week.
Yes. And I like to do the nano needling, which I don't even know how tiny that is. It's super tiny, but I do it on my lips. Yes. And then I put the hyaluronic acid and it kind of plumps them up a little bit if I want to go out.
Lovely, lovely. And if you have problem areas, people always feel like they have to do all the areas. If you have a problem area, that you can choose to do just that area a little bit more frequently and do a full face once a week. I mean, in all honesty, I get in a roll, something happens, like, you know, for us, Christmas is coming, the holiday season. So we spent Christmas with my parents, who really are non-judgmental, and, you know, I probably will not wear makeup for Christmas even, but your mind goes, oh yeah, we're going to see some family members. And now you're enthusiastic about doing it. And now I might do it more frequently. And then there'll be phases of time. So it's like, you know, I forget. And then I just roll like once a month almost. So, and even that is okay. But if you have an area of problems, like, you know, for lips for some people, crow's feet for the others, nose for other people, you can do those every other day a little bit more frequently for certain periods of time if you want to. So I know that many people will say, no, this is like the frequency, this is the regularity. I think it's okay to have some flexibility in your regime with that. And we all have times where we have the capacity to do it more frequently and other times where it just feels like too much. And when it starts to remove the joy for you, pause it.
So do you do any peels, even light peels, for acne or discoloration?
I love enzyme peels because it's like a little Pac-Man that just goes gobble, gobble, gobble up the cells that need to come off the skin, but it will remove completely cornified cells ready to shed. So, and it's not going into the deeper layers. So I will do enzyme peels all day, every day. Over a chemical peel, I should say.
So like a papaya peel.
Yeah, pineapple, papaya, really, really wonderful. They're subtle. Some people don't even feel any sensation on their skin at all. But when you remove it, it's smooth and silky. And I, for super delicate skin with a lot of vascularity, I have to say for us, our enzyme treatment is actually a professional treatment, but I do cheat sometimes because it's so awesome that I'd rather, for clients like that, we'll give them the enzyme in like a little shaker bottle that I put it in a little shaker bottle for them and just get them to mix it into their cleanser and then put it on their skin while they're waiting for the shower to warm up. When they step in the shower, do everything else first and rinse the skin last because an enzyme needs heat and moisture to activate. So that is just perfect, more than enough. And now they haven't scrubbed their skin, creating more vascular damage. So I love enzyme in that capacity as well.
So I haven't used personally traditional skin care brands in decades. Because I think it goes either one of two ways. Either they put too little of an active ingredient that is completely ineffective, or they put so much that it's just irritating.
Mm-hmm.
So what should we be looking for in our skincare line?
Okay. I'm going to come from left field here because I will admit I'm saying this from an extremely biased and spoiled point of view. I am spoiled with the access that I have. So I'll just preface that in saying this. But I love, and when I came across what I use, it just was like logical for me because this is the way my brain thinks and how I seek things out for my clients. So I love things that fundamentally is repairing the skin barrier function, which is why I love corneotherapy. So it has to adhere by that. And then next to that, the second thing is customization. The cookie cutter solution is not something that I love. I don't even love it when I see on the shelf, oh, pigmentation, acne, anti-aging, because we don't necessarily have just pigmentation or just acne or just want to chase aging. Aging, in fact, can have pigment and vascularity associated with it. So I love something that is customizable, that we can assess the skin and then choose what to put in there. So I'm like the back of the bottle person rather than the front of the person of the front of the bottle. And I am absolutely spoiled because with what I use, I can assess the skin. And then I choose what ingredients to put into the cream for you and customize it for each and every client, each and every time. So I change it because seasonal changes, people forget about that. The same thing is not going to work for you in winter than the thing that works for you in summer. So I continuously change the formulations for clients to compensate for seasonal changes. Sometimes they need more antioxidants. Sometimes they need a push on that vitamin A, vitamin C. Wintertime is really great for those. So I'm all upping all my vitamin A's and C's for people at the moment. In summertime, we'd have a lot more antioxidants like grapeseed extract or green tea extract, for example, in their formulations.
So you couldn't recommend any brand even to just check out?
Over-the-counter or professional?
Professional.
Professional. Okay. I'm happy to share what I use. I always am very careful about sharing public platforms. My product of choice is Dermavisuals. It's a lesser-known skincare line. You're going to find it in with licensed estheticians, perhaps dermatologists and so forth, are completely customizable. And you can use some of the products just off the shelf as is, but every product has that profile of rebuilding your skin barrier function and your customization, and uses liposome and nanoparticle technology and clean formulation. So here's actually probably saying what I don't like in skincare might be easier than saying what I do like in skincare. So the don'ts are no preservatives, no artificial emulsifiers. So no preservatives, emulsifiers, fragrances, colorants, silicones, mineral oils.
Can you give examples of emulsifiers?
Emulsifiers is a long category. If you actually type, I should have sent this to you. It's a fun fact. When you start to look at emulsifiers, then if you really Google it, you can make a document and size font of 8 of like 10 pages of emulsifiers, just listing them from, you know, in a Word document. The biggest ones is like your lauryl sulfates, and they're like the big nasties that you want to. I always say the laurels and the ethyls, you got to watch them. But yes, they're emulsifiers, especially because emulsifiers have a buildup effect on the skin. The job of an emulsifier is to mix the water and the oil phase of a mixture together. Otherwise, you have like a blobby product. But if you have a buildup of emulsifiers of your skin, think about this, especially if you pay top dollar for your vitamin A and vitamin C that's stuck in your cream. Then if you step into the shower and the water is connecting with epidermal lipids on your skin, it actually will try to emulsify with the oils of your skin and literally pull the oil out of your skin, flushing that beautiful vitamin A and C that you just paid top dollar for down the drain. So really watching the emulsifiers is a big thing. So yes, don't, laurel is not your friend.
Good. I haven't been using that for years, so.
Good. Yes, great. And it is a controversial, you know, it has become quite controversial as well. But definitely, I'm always, yes, Google the list. You got to be like a little investigator, just like we are with our food ingredients these days.
Mm-hmm. So what are some home care type devices? Can you explain like radio frequency, the hi-fi? There's all these weird contraptions. Yeah. What are they? What do they do?
Okay. So I like a dermal roller. Like, you know, like it. So for those that don't know, it's like a little paintbrush, you know, like a little mini roller paintbrush with teeny tiny little needles around it. And you get like a very tiny one. It feels like a cat licking you. When you go to the clinic, it's like a lion licking you. So it just feels a little bit rough, and it stimulates the epidermal growth factor that in turn stimulates the fibroblasts to make collagen and elastin, glycosaminoglycans. Love it, love it, love it. I do like personally tools like stone rollers and guacha stones. I love them because if you're going out to a special event or you just need some cooling and calming and lymphatic drainage for puffiness of your skin, I think it's a really simple, quick and easy thing, and you don't need a PhD to use it. So I love that for simplicity. LED, there's a lot of home devices coming out now, and I have to say I like it. My skin likes it. I am not as good as doing it consistently, but the thing with LED is for it to use really, to be very efficient, regularity is key. So if you have an at-home device for that, then that is easier to do more frequently. But a word to the consumer, they're not all made equally, and just do your research to make sure you're not buying an LED that actually is Christmas lights. The bandwidth, the nanometer of the lights actually do matter. The output that they give matters. So yes, just make sure you're not buying Christmas lights stuck in a face mask. So, because that's not going to do anything for your skin.
So there was some talk in the DIY beauty community about radio frequency. Mm-hmm. Where do you use it? Where do you not use it? Does it dissolve fat? I don't think it does for the over-the-counter products, but I mean, what are your thoughts?
I've seen it do I don't want to talk negatively about it either, but I have to say in clinic, this is going back 10, 12 years when I managed a really wonderful medi spa here. When I entered the clinic, we were doing a lot of treatments for people who were not happy with the end results with the technology because they felt like they didn't get the results that they wanted. So I think you need to have the treatments. I agree. I don't think the home versions is going to do much. And also you need somebody who understands the technology to make it work really efficiently. It's not my go-to. In all honesty, it's not my go-to treatment of choice. And that is in part due to the heat associated with it again.
So I have been doing PDO threads mm-hmm. for the last few years. I personally think they're amazing. Night and day difference. I have seen some miracles happen. So what are your thoughts on that? And have you done it or seen it done?
I've seen it done. Definitely. It's. I can't say that in the last 10 years, I'm almost not opinionated about it. My brain immediately goes, how can I support it from the topical point of view and healing? My brain always goes to what's the healing involved with any kind of treatment? Is there any downtime? So how can I support it by feeding the skin what it needs for lunch for the skin to function optimally and protect us from the outside world? So my experience with treatments like that is definitely from a post-treatment point of view. It's not something I get involved with and I happily refer to it. I would never tell a client not to have anything because it's kind of like children. When you tell them they can't, then they do. So I do think that within reason, you need to do the things that you feel makes a difference for you and support it with the right aftercare so that you, if you're making the investment, protect your investment. So I kind of relate it to like Botox and fillers as well. Gonna have Botox and fillers? Fine. But it doesn't change the health and well-being of the skin. It actually does nothing for the texture, the color, etc. of the skin. Yes, you're going to be plumped out in the areas that you inject. You're now not going to frown in that area, but you're still going to have pigmentation. You're still going to have texture on your skin like pores. And you might still have inflammation and vascularity of the skin. So that's my approach. You kind of have to meet people with where they're at. And I am definitely, my overall approach is the less invasive, the better. So even with something like RF or threading, I'm going to explore to see what is my least invasive technology or option in that category of treatment that I'm seeking. Like RF now, there's so many new things coming out that has lower heat associated. You can now have RF with dermal needling, all these things. So I'm like, you just got to do your own little bit of research and choose the best option. Know what you're in for, know what the healing time is, know how to protect your investment. And it's you like, we know it's such a fast moving industry. It's really hard to be at the front of everything. So I go through seasons, just FYI, as well. Like even with all the knowledge in your own brain, it's hard to retain everything at your fingertips. So I review everything in seasons. So right now I'm doing eczema, psoriasis, any dry skin, corneocyte compaction, skin conditions is like my zone of review at the moment that I do a really deep dive, really do research, watch new and upcoming, even medications that's available for psoriasis or shingles kind of part as in part of that, because you can't do anything while shingles is on. But after shingles, the skin is really dry and flaky. So all of that then pars into each other. And I think that's good for anything in life is just review it. You have to review everything in frequency and just have my list and I just revisit it on a regular interval.
So can you give us a little bit insight on what your skincare routine looks like?
Yes. It's very simple. I cleanse, I tone, I use eye cream, I moisturize. That's it. Every morning and every night. And my cleanser is sometimes a microfiber cloth. Okay. Then once a week, I have a little exfoliating treatment, like the enzyme treatment that I just mentioned to you, followed with a mask. And I'm so simple in my approach that I love a cream-based mask. So don't tell anyone. Well, I do tell all my clients, so it's not really a secret, but I swap my night cream for my cream-based mask and sleep in it. Done. When I'm really, really encouraged to take some time for myself, I will do a sheet mask or a clay mask. And my youngest boy in particular, he loves doing it with me. So we try to turn it into a weekly thing that I do with my boys. The older is more reluctant than the younger, but it's still fun. And so hydration, and sun protection. Of course, I put sun protection on every day as well, because my battle is pigmentation. So I don't skip a beat on that. And I will say that my moisturizer is customized. So it basically has a serum built into my moisturizer.
Nice. So before we go, the top mistakes people make on their skin that they should stop right now.
Harsh cleansers, treating their skin like the kitchen floor. If you squeak, you've stripped. Oil is critical to skin health. If you strip the oil off your skin, then you're immediately compromised.
Yep, totally agree. So where can everybody learn more about you, and what social media platforms are you the most active on?
I love social media. I am most active on Instagram, which is very simple, at Renee Serbon. That's Renee with one E because I'm special. R-E-N-E-S-E-R-B-O-N. And everything, how to get in touch with me, is on reneeserbon.com. Super easy to find. And I'm really easy to communicate with. So whether you shoot me off an email or a DM message via Instagram, all of that is great. Oh, and I do have a little gift that I can share with the audience. I have a wonderful skin quiz for people who kind of want to know generically, it's non-product aligned, what they should be doing and should not be doing for their skin for different skin types. So the quiz helps you establish what skin type you have. And then you can say, yes, please. It gives you basic information straight away. And if you want in-depth knowledge, you can choose to submit your email address so that we can email you a PDF document with all the do's and don'ts for different skin types. And that is on my Facebook page, Renee Serbon Skin Expert. I will make sure that we pin that to the top of my Facebook page. It's easy for everybody to find.
Wonderful. So I want to check that out and do it too. Is there anything else you'd like to leave the audience with before we go?
Yes, I think that you want to make sure that your esthetician kind of knows skin structure and function. If they use laser treatments, please ask them if they know what the Fitzpatrick skin type is. And if they don't, run, because knowing that will help them set up any technology that they have really safely for you. And keep it simple and don't forget your sunscreen.
Perfect. So thank you again for your time.
Really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
I had an episode a while back with Dr. Mona Fahoum of Feminescence, and we spoke about Feminescence, Maca Harmony, and their Maca products. And if you're a woman who's ever had hormonal imbalances, if you're trying to come off the birth control pill, or even if you're going through menopause, this is a natural way to help ease that transition and to help balance your hormones. There's nothing quite like it, so go to feminescence.com, enter code KAT15, KAT15, for 15% off any of their single pack products, and definitely go check out the episode. Just search for Mona Fahoum on my podcast and listen. You won't regret it. Thank you for listening to the show. Please show your support for the podcast by leaving a 5-star review. Learn more about the show and what I have to offer you at katkatibi.com. Consider being a part of the new Patreon, where episodes are ad-free and you'll find extra bonus content. Send a voicemail question or email me. Check the show notes for more information.
This podcast is for informational merrymakings and metaphysical purposes only. Statements and views are not medical advice. This podcast, including CACA-TB, disclaim any adverse effects by the use of information you may have heard. Opinions of guests are totally their own. This podcast does not endorse statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications, credibilities, or sanity. Individuals may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to on the podcast. If you think you have a medical problem, consult with a licensed medical physician, not just the spirit of your ancestors while on ayahuasca.